Today, how an Instagram account exposed a culture of sexual abuse in UK schools. Last June, Somasara was finishing up her final year university exams when she started watching Michaela Cole's BBC drama I May Destroy You.
I was so moved, and it really made me reflect on my own experiences throughout my teenage years as well as everyday interactions.
The critically acclaimed show is based on Cole's own experience of being raped.
He thinks this is all a little uncalled for, and this personal space thing is all going a bit too far. And he's very confident in his view because he's gone exploring to see for himself what boundaries and violations these women might be banging on about, because Bob's thorough.
You know, I liked how it also highlighted how people aren't one thing or another. They're not completely a demon or innocent, and how everyone is almost capable of behaviours that are harmful.
I've got this thing in my head of, like, this guy.
During that time, I'd been having these conversations with friends and people in my life, and we realised that so many of us had had these experiences of rape culture and sexual violence and abuse that we didn't talk about when we were younger.
Soma made the decision to share some of her own experiences on Instagram. She received hundreds of similar accounts in response, and this led her to set up the website Everyone's Invited. In the aftermath of the death of Sarah Everard and the ensuing conversation about male violence, the site has been overwhelmed with testimonies. From sexual assaults, groping in the classroom, to slut-shaming and pressure to send nudes. More than 14,000 people have now submitted anonymous accounts of their experiences.
Survivors are truly able to express their stories without repercussions and without the stigma and the shame that surrounds these issues.
Soma's website has already had far-reaching consequences, with the government and schools regulator Ofsted launching reviews. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, how do we stop harassment and sexual violence in our schools? Soma, Everyone's Invited has become a successful campaign now, but take me back to the moment when it all began.
I decided to post about my experiences of rape culture on my Instagram, and I was overwhelmed with responses from people in my life and people who used to be in my life, and just so many people and strangers as well reaching out to say that they really resonated with everything I was saying about rape culture, and also shared their own testimonies with me. So I received and shared about 300 testimonies back in June. And from that, I just got an inkling of, like, the scale of the problem and a sense that this is much bigger than, you know, I might have initially thought. In response to that, I decided to set up a more permanent platform for survivors to share and raise awareness.
Are there any recurring patterns that are showing up, do you think, in the testimonies, particularly coming from people of school age?
I think people have realised things that had happened to them that they didn't realise was wrong at the time, and then it manifests later on. It can be years later. People are detailing the complex consequences of these moments. It's like, you know, it's affecting their mental health, their relationships. A lot of the trauma is delayed and repressed, and it comes out in these other ways that you don't expect. And when you experience sexual violence and abuse, these experiences stay with you for life. And it's not about, you can't really get over it. You kind of just have to learn to live with it. I think every story is unique, but there are many recurring patterns and strands, and it's heartbreaking.
You've given people a space to share their stories. Did you feel able to talk about these things when you were a teenager?
So I remember growing up and just, you know, things like sexual harassment and boys like unwanted touching and those derogatory sexist comments, those things were so normalized amongst the people I was hanging out with in London and those social circles. I guess I didn't really have the vocabulary or the courage to properly challenge those moments. I mean, I remember trying, but you're immediately shut down for being, you know, a feminazi or dull and intense and ruining the fun. I struggled with it, but I kind of accepted it as just the norm and that's what being a young girl and woman is like.
Lexi Topping, you're a senior news reporter for The Guardian and you focused on gender and equality for many years now. What did you think when you first came across Everyone's Invited?
Quite honestly, I thought, well, yes, of course, we know this. And when I realised that there was the extent of the shock and horror that was being expressed, I was quite surprised, really, because as far as I was concerned, these were stories that resonated with stories I'd been hearing for at least a decade. And when I did hear that sense of shock, I thought, well, I wonder if anyone will listen this time.
What has the fallout been from these stories being disclosed?
I mean, the fallout has been enormous. We've heard that the Metropolitan Police in London have been reviewing the content and encouraging victims to come forward. We've heard that the police have made contact with some of the schools that have been named by Everyone's Invited, that they've offered specialist support to potential victims. The other day, we heard about the chairman of the Education Select Committee saying that private school inspections need to be overhauled. And then we've had the Education Secretary, Gavin Williamson, saying that the allegations are shocking and abhorrent. So that's some of the fallout. The other part of this is that some of the most expensive fee-paying schools in the country have gone into full crisis management mode. You know, many are saying how shocked they are, how this behaviour is completely against the ethos of their schools. They've offered apologies. And we've had some pretty big concrete actions. You know, Highgate School, for example, have announced an external review led by a former Justice of Appeal. The head teacher at Westminster has said that all of the allegations are going to be investigated and referred to the local authority and that there was going to be a whole school consultation. A lot has happened in the matter of a few weeks, including a lot of public outcry.
What do we know about how widespread sexual harassment and abuse is between school students in this country?
We know that it's huge, and we have known that for quite some time. A report from the End Violence Against Women Coalition from 2016 cited evidence from the BBC, which had done a FOI, and it found endemic levels of sexual violence and harassment in schools. It found that there had been 5,500 sexual offences reported to the police as having taken place in UK schools over a three-year period, and that included 600 rapes. Now, Ivor said that equated to essentially a rape a day.
You mentioned earlier that the Education Secretary, Gavin Williamson, has said he is shocked by these latest allegations. But obviously, this has been going on for some time. The data that came out a few years ago was also completely shocking. What have you made of the government response to this story?
I think campaigners in the field are utterly horrified at Gavin Williamson saying that he's shocked and appalled. They say that the government knows all about this and it has known about it for a very long time. So I think they would say that that is disingenuous at best and opportunistic and actually doesn't at all address the real issues that need addressing, which is that we need better training and more comprehensive guidelines for schools in order to be able to tackle these very complex issues.
You've mentioned the fallout in private schools. There's been a big focus on them in this, hasn't there? The ones that have been named in these accounts. Why do you think this is?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, this, because as I've said, this issue is not in any way new, but I think the focus on private schools is. And I think some of that is probably circumstantial. Soma, who started the site herself, went to a private school. And so the initial stories will have come from her extended network. But I think it is more than that. I think the British media is obsessed with class, isn't it? And so these stories of abuse have featured every day in publications who may not have featured stories about girls from state schools being abused quite so extensively, in my view. But I do think, in addition to that, there's something else going on. I spoke to a long-term campaigner in this field on background, and she was saying that, in her opinion, there was something uniquely problematic about private schools, a sense that they had bred a sense of entitlement. And she put it as the level of entitlement of these boys and the culture around them in their school, in their families, really matters in this debate. But the explosion of testimonies on Everyone's Invited really just brings home that this is not something that happens just in state schools, just to people of a certain demographic, just to people of a certain class. This is something that happens mainly to girls every day in every school.
Lexi, one thing that struck me when I've been reading through the testimonies on Everyone's Invited is the number of young people who say they felt unsupported by their schools when they made allegations. How should schools be dealing with this?
The Department of Education was forced to issue guidance in 2018 to tell schools what to do when there was peer-on-peer abuse. It hadn't really existed before that point. And the Department of Education only introduced that guidance because they were threatened with a judicial review and because cases kept coming to court about girls who said that their human rights had been violated and their equality rights had been violated because there wasn't the guidance in schools and schools didn't know what to do when they came forward with allegations of sexual misconduct.
What responsibility do they have if they become aware of abuse happening between pupils?
So what schools are meant to do is to listen, make sure that they take steps to protect the alleged victim, and then investigate any allegations to the best of their ability. That could be engaging local safeguarding leads. It could be speaking to other teachers, and there should normally be a safeguarding lead in the school. There's no statutory duty to report any allegations to the police in England. There is in Northern Ireland. But campaigners say that that actually has quite a chilling effect because often police aren't the best equipped to deal with these complaints, and it's not something that can go through the criminal justice system. They will say, well, you know, there's nothing we can do from a police perspective. And then the police saying that it's not a police matter closes down the investigation in the school. Whereas campaigners are saying, well, actually, what the school needs to do is have the confidence to fully investigate any allegations.
One of the things Everyone's Invited are calling for is better sex education in schools. And in September last year, the Department of Education introduced compulsory relationships education for primary pupils and relationships and sex education for secondary pupils. How was this being taught in schools before then?
Basically, the picture was really patchy ahead of the new guidance. It was only compulsory in maintained schools, so not in free schools or academies. And because there was a growing number of academies, there were fewer schools who really had to adhere to it. Although it was a huge win getting relationships and sex education into schools, critics argue that it is still limited. There is an option to opt out of teaching the full curriculum up until the age of 15. There's also a lack of funding for expert sector organisations to provide this kind of very particular sex education in schools. And they also say that the curriculum has been designed by committee, so the guidance is not clear enough and contains real caveats and opt-outs. Some schools can just cherry pick the parts that they want. And the experts I've spoken to say that it really needs to be much clearer about what schools have to do, stressing that this is really mandatory.
What was sex education like for you at school?
Very quiet. I didn't have a lot of sex education at school. I was very fortunate that my parents were very proactive about it, very positive about it. It was very Mean Girls. If you know the famous scene from Mean Girls, it was very don't have sex because you will get pregnant and die kind of attitude.
We literally chanted that at my school.
No.
Yeah, the teacher shouted, what do you do if you don't want to get pregnant? We all shouted, don't have sex.
That's awful.
Cordelia Morrison works for Tender, a charity that runs workshops in schools across England on healthy relationships and preventing sexual violence. She sees firsthand how children and young people develop their understanding of what consent means.
We run an exercise very often in secondary schools. It's one of our most commonly run exercises, which is about spotting the early warning signs that a relationship may not be particularly healthy if you were to pursue it. So the scenario is a young person who's about 15 has attended a party with her cousin. Her parents are not aware that she's there, and she encounters an older young person, usually played as a man, who's at least 18 or over, who is aware of her age and attempts to ask her out on a date and eventually succeeds. He succeeds in coercing her onto a date. And it's a really interesting scene for young people to observe and to identify the red flags, particularly because a lot of young people will play that role very differently. Some young people, if they immediately identify that this is a coercive form of behaviour, will often play him as quite predatory. A lot of young people will just play him as very confident and charming and, you know, with a bit of swagger. And it can make it really difficult for young people to identify those early warning signs when we discuss what might be the follow-on of that relationship. So say that she goes on the date with this person, and say if something unhealthy happens, either on the date or further down the line, then who holds the responsibility there? And it is so often that young people will claim that it's her responsibility. It's her responsibility to have said no to the date, to have identified those early warning signs that often themselves the group won't have picked up on all of them. And amazing how often that even with having the majority of the lines in that dialogue, the perpetrator almost becomes invisible to a lot of groups, or certainly fades into the background with an assumption that he was going to do that anyway. There was no way that behaviour was going to change. So now it's her responsibility to navigate her way out of that situation, rather than taking a couple of steps back and going, OK, well, why is he behaving like this? Could actually he behave in a different way?
What age do you think we should start thinking about talking about these sorts of issues with kids and talking about healthy relationships with them?
We work with young people from sort of 7 and 8 year olds all the way up to age 25. I mean, personally, we have considered in the past doing more early years work, because for us, we feel it's better to be having lots of smaller, lighter conversations with young people consistently from a very young age than it is to have one really awkward, uncomfortable conversation with young people when they're older, potentially after something bad has already happened, which unfortunately can tend to be the case of this is when these conversations happen, is where something has already gone wrong and has had an impact on young people. So having those very kind of early conversations with young people, even as simple as things such as I know I have friends who have conversations with their very young children around things like tickling, for example. Some children absolutely love it, some children absolutely hate it. But it's a really great place to start of giving that young person a vocabulary and understanding that they have the right to tell you if they're not comfortable with a form of physical contact.
And do you get a sense of where young people are learning about relationships before they come and speak to you?
Obviously now for young people, it's a really different landscape than it was for certainly when I was at school, because there's that much media influence around them. That can be mainstream media, social media. And obviously, because most young people have access to some form of device at some point, unfortunately, that means that they do have a lot of access to mainstream pornography, which, as we know, doesn't always promote healthy or realistic perceptions of sex, particularly in relation to gender roles and actually other aspects of identity as well. Unfortunately, there can be quite a lot of fetishization of different people in pornography, which young people can internalize. And it's also quite understandable that they're going there as well, because pornography for a lot of young people seems like a kind of, great, this is my how-to manual of how to have sex because I'm going to see two actual people having sex. But unfortunately for young people, because it's obviously a lot of the pornography they're watching could be quite distressing for them, it can create quite an uncomfortable relationship for an individual with their sexuality or with their expectations of what sex is going to be.
Some of the testimonies on Everyone's Invited talk about the impact of having explicit photos shared without permission. Is this something you've come across?
I have had teachers request us to go in and deliver workshops around the sending of explicit images, or what young people might refer to as sending nudes, from as young as year four, which is, we're talking sort of 7 and 8 year olds.
Okay. And that's because they had a concern it was happening in their class.
Yes. That's nearly always come from teachers being aware that something has happened, or there being a safeguarding incident between children of that age, because they have access to devices where they are able to do it.
Coming up, Everyone's Invited is now asking for ideas that can make a difference. So what will it take to actually change things? Lexi, beyond education in schools, what do you think perhaps society should be looking at to tackle the issue of sexual abuse?
Experts I've spoken to have talked about the idea that we could have a sustained public health campaign around these issues. We've done it for smoking. We do it all the time for obesity. There have been attempts at campaigns from the Home Office on this, but nothing recently. So I think if there was, you know, if there was a real willingness at the heart of government to tackle these issues, that's the kind of thing that we would be looking at, big picture, across the whole UK. But at the moment, there doesn't seem to be a willingness to do that. It's just tinkering around the edges and coming up with headline grabbing policies in the hope that this is a topic that will pass and we'll move on to the next news story in a few days.
Right. So for now, it looks like the onus is on schools, but also on families. You recently wrote an article about how parents should approach relationship education with their children. What did you find out?
It was fascinating, actually. It was really great to speak to some experts about this. I'm a parent myself, and even though my children...
So did you learn something?
Yes, even though my children are very small, but this is still something that my eldest child is a boy, and I know that this is something that I am going to be speaking to him about throughout his life. And that was one of my real take-homes from the conversations I had with experts, is that it's never too early to start talking about issues of healthy relationships and consent, and also making sure that these conversations aren't the stereotypical the chat, and instead making those conversations about sex and relationships something that is incorporated into daily life. So you might use talking about a television program as a way of doing it, or talking about an issue that's happened to the son of your friend as a way of making sure that the conversation isn't too pressured. Another expert told me that a great way of doing it is to have these conversations in the car when you don't have to maintain eye contact, which I just thought is a simple and very good tip.
And I think it's so interesting what you say about having multiple conversations rather than the chat, because I feel that so many of us have grown up with this idea that your parents have to prepare to have this one conversation with you and then you'll never have to talk about it again. You know, this is something that as a society we're so sensitive about, aren't we?
Well, we're so bad at talking about sex in a positive way. We only ever talk about sex as something salacious or something, you know, criminal. And what actually we need to be doing is recognizing that, you know, good sex is part of a good life. I also think, particularly as girls, we aren't taught that sex can be fun, and sex might be something that you want to do. One of the things that I found most depressing from reading the testimonies on Everyone's Invited is just how much so-called slut shaming there is still going on, that young girls who had been often coerced into sexual activity that they didn't really want to partake in were then labelled, you know, sluts, and they were the ones accused of having loose sexuality. And I find that really disheartening that we're in 2021 and we're still talking about sex like that.
Obviously, the accounts that have been collated by Everyone's Invited are very disturbing. But are you encouraged that this website has grown quite organically from young women like Sommer?
I think the one thing that makes me feel positive as a journalist in this area, and I'll be honest, quite often there isn't much to feel positive about, is the fact that these voices are being heard in a way that I don't think we've heard before. And I do think that young people in this country won't be silenced in the way that they once were. And I do think the young women, particularly of this country, are fairly fearless.
What have you made of the response in the last couple of weeks, Sommer, from the media and also from schools?
It's extraordinary. I don't know how I can really put it into words. It's just, I could never have imagined a response like this in my life.
I wondered, during all of this, if you've heard from many men who've got in touch with you, and if so, what they've said to you?
Yes, I've been really encouraged to see the response from men and boys. We've had countless men reach out and say how much those testimonies have completely shifted their understanding and perspective on these problems. And even admitting and saying things like, you know what, I didn't understand. And reflecting upon their own behaviours and seeing how they may have actually been complicit or guilty of creating this culture in the past. And that's so incredible to receive, and so many parents reaching out, a lot of dads. It's incredible.
When you set up Everyone's Invited, what did you hope to achieve? And what do you hope to achieve now?
Well, I guess when I first posted my experience, I guess it was out of frustration, and it was more for myself, and it was just kind of a cathartic moment for me. But when I decided to set up the account, it was, you know, about raising awareness. I wanted to expose rape culture and just get as many people I could possibly to listen and understand and shed a light on this huge problem. And then, you know, it's amazing to see the progress, to be here today. So I guess we kind of have achieved that, in the sense that I feel it is pretty exposed right now. So eradicating it is the next goal. And I think to achieve that, we are already achieving it. I think even just having this conversation with you, talking about these issues, it's about a cultural shift in thoughts and beliefs and attitudes. And that requires everyone. Everyone is, it really doesn't mean what it says. Everyone is invited to this conversation, because I don't think things can change unless everyone participates.
Well, Sommer, thank you so much for speaking to me and for the work that you've done. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Sommer Sara, Alexandra Topping, and Cordelia Morrison. Read more about Sommer's work and Lexi's coverage of the fallout from Everyone's Invited at theguardian.com. There you can also read our education correspondent Sally Wheel's article, which I'd really recommend, on the sexual harassment teachers face from their students in schools. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Cassin and exec'd by Lucy Greenwell. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.